So I would like to thank the organizer to give me the opportunity to talk about three-body collision, in particular the F-morph physics in the context of collision of ultra-cold alkali atoms. So this the work I'm going to talk about today is partially done while I'm in joint quantum institute with Paul, and also partially done while I was at GILA with Dr. Chris Green and collaborators Jose Dinkow and Jia Wang. So talking about three-body physics at ultra-cold collisions, in ultra-cold collisions, probably the most famous topic is the F-morph effect. It's a purely quantum effect, and here I'm showing a probability density for F-morph state, three-body F-morph state, in a kind of a bizarre coordinate. Because the F-morph effect was derived with isotropic interactions. So if you look at the distribution, spatial distribution of particles that are in the F-morph state, you will see an isotropic distribution. However, three particles in F-morph state can have different geometries and have different associated with different probabilities. So this probability density is given as two coordinates. When the polar angle represent the shape of the three-body triangles. So from the equilateral triangle, when the polar angle is zero to a configuration where two of the atoms are close together when the polar angle is pi over 2. The azimuthal angle on this plane characterize the permutation of three particles and does not carry information for the shapes of the three-body triangle. The radius for a point on this surface represents probability density for three particles that is in a specific three-body configuration. So from this density plot, we can see that the three particles prefers to form a configuration where two of them are close together. However, for all other configurations, the probability for three particle to be in that configuration is pretty comparable. So typically, people think the particles in F-morph state is pretty floppy state, and have some character of particles in liquid, which is a kind of character for the F-morph state. So here's my outline. First, I will give an introduction to the F-morph effect. Then I will discuss the recently discovered universal three-body parameter near broad flashbar resonance in ultra-cold alkali atoms. Then I will talk about our studies on three-body problem with multi-channel interaction, two-body multi-channel interactions. I will show some result for three-body potential curves for alkali atoms, including hyperfine physics. And then I will talk about some result for the F-morph resonances in recently experimentally realized cesium-lithium admixture.
I copied this file. Seems like some content is missing because of
Yeah, there was an error while I copied the file to the laptop, so okay, this will do it. So first, let's look at the three-body problem, near unitarity limit. So what is the unitarity limit? It is a limit for the interaction of the particle such that the scattering length between two particles is infinite. Now this corresponds to a critical point in quantum mechanics. Scattering length, as most of you have known, that it is formally defined by the low energy phase shift for two-body collisions. Now, intuitively, the scattering length roughly represent the size of a two-body state near the two-body breakup threshold. So here I'm plotting the two-body binding two-body energy versus the strength of the two-body interaction. At some critical point, there will be a zero energy two-body bound state formed exactly at the two-body breakup threshold. And the two-body radial wave function looks like this in case of van der Waals interaction at small distance. But the most important point is that the radial wave function becomes flat asymptotically. So basically, this represents a two-body state with infinitely large size. Now, when the interaction strength increase, such that the binding energy become bigger, so that the scattering length move from a pole to a finite value, you'll see that the size of the two-body wave function, two-body bound state, near the threshold, becomes smaller as the scattering length decreases. So when the scattering length is large, the wave function, the two-body wave function, can have large amplitude outside the potential interaction, which is one character one here. So this kind of state, that with a large spatial extension outside of the classically forbidden region, is called halo state. And in nuclear system, there has been a very long discussion for the halo state. For instance, helium-6, lithium-11. These nuclei are both candidates for halo states. And in atomic system, we have helium-3 trimer that is considered as a halo state. Now, near the unitarity limit, the more important or more famous effect is three-body Fermat effect. So what is the Fermat effect? In 1970, the Russian physicist, nuclear physicist, Vitaly Fermat, predicted that for three particles with isotropic short-range interactions, near the unitarity limit, when the scattering length goes infinity, three particles can form an infinite series of three-body bound state with their binding energies scales with a geometric serial. So here I'm showing a sketch of the three-body binding energy, three-body bound state energies with an inverse scattering length. So this vertical line represents the unitarity limit. And as you can see, when the scattering length increases, whenever the scattering length increases by a factor of 22.7, a new three-body bound state forms in the three-body breakup threshold when the scattering length is negative. And the forms, there's also three-body Fermat state formed from the atom dimer breakup threshold when the scattering length is positive. So when the scattering length is negative, these three-body Fermat states are Borromean states, which means it's characterized, it can be represented by the symbol. So it means that whenever any one of the particle, any one of the atoms leaves from the, gets kicked out from the state, all three particles will fall apart. The state will fall apart. At the unitarity, there will be infinite number of bound states with increasingly large size, with only short-range interactions. Now, if we naively consider the principle of quantum mechanics, typically we will think that for three particles with three pair interactions, the quantum phase accumulated from these three potentials will be a finite number. It is pretty strange, however, that there, with this finite number of quantum phase, there could be an infinite number of three-body bound states. Now, the most bizarre thing is that if the interaction strength is increased such that the scattering change from infinite to finite positive value, there will be less F-mod bound states in the system, which is quite counterintuitive because we will typically expect that a stronger interaction will give a more bound state in the system, which is a complete opposite in this case.
Can you go back to this?
Sure. You mean the last point?
Are you saying that A finite is weaker interaction with A infinite?
Stronger. On this side, the interaction strength is increasing along this direction. So yeah, you get more, it is not counterintuitive in this side, because you get more bound states as you increase the strength of the interaction. On the other side, however, on the positive side of scattering, it's counterintuitive.
But if you recognize that A is really the proper measure of the strength of the interaction, then there's...
I'm talking about actual interaction between the particles that give the scattering. So yeah, in many body sense, people may talk about the strength of the scattering, the size of the scattering as the strength of interaction. But in reality, in a microscopic level, the interaction that gives a finite positive A actually corresponds to smaller interaction strengths compared to the unitary
smaller depth of potential.
That's right.
So
yeah.
If you think the depth of potential is the proper measure of the strength.
That's right. Yeah.
But now, you know, in reality, you know, the potentials, the middle potentials are very deep. So this change, you know, in the scattering, only if any, that would be only a very small change in the depth.
It's true.
Potential.
Yeah, it's true.
And there is a very tiny effect compared to the length you are looking here.
It's true. In realistic atomic system or nuclear systems, the depth of the potential, the change of in the depth of potential near this region is pretty small. But even for in a model case, when you use model interaction, if the depth of potential is relatively shallow, in case where it's only support one bound state, for instance, then this change from unitary to finite value is not so negligible. But this effect is the same, in the sense of you increase the strength of the interaction, or depth of potential, but you get less number of bound states in three-body system. So, turns out the F-mod effects, although it's proposed in the context of nuclear physics for a long time, hasn't been really observed in that context in nuclear systems because of the fact that the nuclear interaction is really difficult to manipulate. So we have no control over the interaction there. In ultra-cold atoms, however, it's pretty, via flash bar resonances, it's pretty easy to tune the scattering, the interaction and the scattering through from the weak interaction regime to the strong interaction regime. So this is how people observe the three-body F-mod effect in ultra-cold atoms. Now, when on the negative side of the scattering, when the F-mod state is formed at the three-body breakup threshold, the three-body recombination rate will have a peak exactly at the place where the F-mod state is formed. On the positive side of the scattering, between the value of scattering where two of the F-mod states are formed, there will be an interference minimum characterized F-mod effect or F-mod states in the three-body recombination rate. Also, on the positive side of scattering, when the F-mod state is formed at the atom molecule breakup threshold, a peak will appear in the process of vibrational relaxation of halo state, or we call flashbar molecule. So these three body collisional process, can all be used to identify or observe the FMOL effect or FMOL state in ultra cold atoms. Now, the first experimental observation was made in cesium atoms, ultra cold cesium atoms. In that case, they have observed one peak, resonant peak, on the negative side of scatter length and the interference minimum on the positive side of scatter length. As you can see, actually, the temperature of the measurement does matter for the strength of the signal. When it goes to ultra cold, the strength of the interaction becomes stronger. When it goes to a little higher temperature, there's a thermal averaging effect that can smooth out some of the partially smooth out the FMOL signatures. Now, after this first observation, there has been many observations of FMOL effect or FMOL character features in ultra cold atoms, including the three body recombination and atom dimer relaxation rates. Also, there are experiments even for radio use microwave association of the FMOL state. So people can already start to have the ability to manipulate the FMOL state nowadays. Now, one unanswered question is the three body parameter. Basically, the calculator is the position of these resonant peaks or interference minimum. So we know that the separation of these resonant peaks in three body recombination is separated by is determined by the universal scaling 22.7. But the exact position of these peaks are typically not known. And theoretically, people use a three-body parameter to represent the position. So for a long time, people have thought that the three-body parameter is not universal. People expect that this parameter should depend on the detail of the Schrödinger interaction, which makes the prediction of this three-body parameter extremely difficult in case of the realistic system. For instance, in
It's assumed that particles have no statistics, no spins.
Yeah.
Because I think free neutrons couldn't form the final state because of polar spins.
That's right, yeah. Three spin polarized fermion cannot form that.
Okay, so it's assumed that statistics there wasn't formed some kind of. Fermions doesn't exist.
In fact, there are different scenarios. Let me make this a little specific. So people have studied this in detail. For three identical bosons, you have FMOL effect. If you have a two boson, one distinguished particle, you can also have FMOL effect when the scatter length between the heteronuclear pair is large. So you have two large scatter lengths in the system. Now, it turns out that no matter what kind of if all particles are distinguishable, the requirement for FMOL effect is that there should be at least two large scatter lengths. So in any distinguished particle, if you have more than two or two large scatter lengths, you have FMOL effect. Now in system of fermions, if you have two identical fermions and one distinguished particle, there can also be FMOL effect, but with a requirement that if the distinguished particle is light enough.
But this is a question why there are no human states and nuclear fission, because neutrons attract each other, but still there is no state. It's kind of fermion specific.
Well, let's see. If in case of two neutrons, for instance, for two neutrons, one nuclei, then in that case, you do not have FMOL state. That's right. You have two.
There is reason to believe that the triton is an FMOL state, at least it has some properties that are consistent with FMOL state. There's no excited triton.
Uh-huh.
But if you tune the quark masses in QCD, you could get an excited triton and infinitely more. So
mm-hmm.
the parameters of QCD are such that the triton has some FMOL character, and there are critical values in quark mass where we have all the infinitely excited states.
I think, but in that case, the neutron cannot be spin polarized, right? They cannot be in the same spin state.
The triton has a proton and two neutrons.
That's right, yeah. The neutrons, two neutrons.
The trineutron would not be in that mode.
Yeah, 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 sure.
Also, another question is, if you want conjunction to maybe infinite series of spins,
mm-hmm.
why not infinite in any
practical situation? Oh, the thing is that in reality, it's pretty unlikely to make the scatterings to be exactly as to take the infinite value. For instance, if you look at...
You show the formula which contains arbitrary parameter n.
Sorry?
But it's not a single state. It's an infinite series of states. And your formula shows somewhere around the first page.
You have short range interactions, right?
Yes. It's not one state. It's n is a... with quantum number n, which may be anything.
This quantum number? You mean?
Yeah.
That's actually a vibrational quantum number.
Yeah, but it's not a single state, so where are the other states?
Oh, where are the other states? So, for finite value of scatterlines, you have only finite number of FMOL states.
What is the cutoff? How can you say straight away what is the number of states? What parameter determines the number of states?
The number of states actually depends on the size of scatterlines.
Okay, you have a parameter scattered on left. You need to make a dimensionless parameter. Number of states.
Oh, I see.
What is this parameter determine this number of states?
So this infinite number, yeah. So to compare with the scatterlands, the size of scatterlands, typically in realistic system, we hand wavingly say it's a range of interaction. Now the range of interaction is characterized by the distance where the interaction strength is comparable to the natural kinetic energy operator or kinetic energy of the particles, which is inversely proportional to the mass, particle mass, and inversely proportional square of the distance.
Can you write a little bit more?
The size of
sure.
your
state. So scattering length divided by size of the state? Or
no, scattering length divided by the range of
interaction. Range of interaction.
Let's see. Yeah, give me 1 second. So the range of interaction, we typically call it R0. This range of interaction, but this is a little hand-waving argument. More rigorous way is to define a range of interaction so if this is strength of the interaction, the range of the interaction defined by this, the mass of the particle, or reduced mass of the two particles, times R0 square. So H bar square. So this is a typical scale for the kinetic energy for two particles. And when these two equal, the point where where the interaction equals the kinetic energy defines the range of the interaction. When we talk about large scatterlands, we are comparing the scatterlands with this
R0. Is not all states scattered and divided by this parameter?
That's right, yeah. Basically, the number of FMOL states scales approximately it's given by log of the scatterlands divided by R0.
Fine, thank you. Mm-hmm. Never bigger than 2. Never bigger than 2. With any realistic situation. Is it slow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, let's say there's good reason to expect to see much bigger than 2.
Yeah.
If you have heavy light,
glass still particles.
Well, if you have constituents that are one heavy and one light and two heavy, then instead of 22.7 he mentioned, it becomes a much smaller number. And it is possible that they will be able to see
much more than
so very very classical
lithium cesium cesium.
Yeah, lithium cesium cesium, which you'll get to, we'll have that example precisely.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, it's a good point. So separation
in experiments, they never get the scattering length to be too enormous because something always intervenes. It's a finite temperature, a finite collision energy. It's the mean density. The density, mean distance between particles is controlled by particle density or whatever. So something intervenes and essentially cuts off the length scale experimentally. So it's been a challenge to get very far up the series.
Yeah, so the separation here as 22.7 is given is for the system of three identical particles, so identical bosons, for instance. This separation, however, can be changed in other systems with other particles and identical particle symmetry. So in case of too heavy on one light system, as the one I just mentioned, if the scattering length between these two pairs is large, now this system can also have F-mol effect, F-mol state, and the separation between the F-mol states, formation of F-mol state in this system is much smaller, could be much smaller than 22.7.
What is it for lithium cesium cesium? What is the number?
It's about 5. So yes, that's on the topic I'm going to talk about today. So now comes the question of the three-body parameter. In other words, the determination of the ground F-mol state. So experimentally, people already found that in case of three identical particles in alkali, for alkali atoms, the three-body parameter is universal. It's about minus 9 times Van der Waals length. Now, here, the unobserved three-body effect for three-body parameter in the heteronuclear system is what I'm more interested in and want to talk about here. So in a system with two heavy particles and one light distinguished particle, we can write the Schwarner equation in this form. So let's see the interaction between the particles. I use a pairwise interaction to represent. The interaction between the heavy particles or heavy atoms is a Van der Waals form when the distance between these two heavy particles is close. Now the interaction between the heavy and light pairs also behave like Van der Waals and at small distance. Now the point is that the interesting point is that when the scattering length between the heavy light pair is large, if we treat this light particle by the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, the effective interaction mediated by this light particle for these two heavy pairs behave like one over the heavy distance square. And the strength of the interaction is inversely proportional to the mass of the light particle. So it has been well known that the solution of the Radio-Schwarner equation in presence of just such interaction gives the infinite number of bound state. That this is exactly where the F-mol states or F-mol effect comes from. Also, as the strength of this interaction, attractive one over square interaction becomes stronger, it is not difficult to imagine that the separation for F-mol states becomes smaller. But from these two behavior, we can imagine a scenario where the three-body parameter for this system, heteronuclear system, could be universal. Now, if we divide the radius if we divide the distance between the heavy particle in two regions by the van der Waals length of the heavy particle. So when the distance between the two heavy particles is bigger than this distance, the van der Waals length between the heavy particle, the potential, the effective potential mediated by light particle is attractive on R square. Now, when the distance between the two heavy particles is much smaller than this value, than this length, it quickly becomes pretty sharp, become fairly deep, which is determined by the van der Waals interaction between the heavy pairs. So in fact, we have already known that the wave function in this region, in this part of this form of potential, can be analytically determined. And the wave function in this van der Waals interaction can also be easily determined analytically. And we have known that in both cases, wave functions are pretty universal. If the scattering length for the heavy pairs is fixed. So it's not hard to imagine that the three-body parameter or the ground state, Fermat state, ground Fermat state energy is universally determined by these parameters, the van der Waals length and the Cc coefficient and the scattering length between the heavy particles. So here I'm showing how this is happening. So here I'm showing the ground Fermat of wave function for a system with two heavy atoms. Here is ytterbium 174 as an example, with a light heavy, with a light atom lithium 6. The scattering length between the heavy pairs is fixed to be infinite. Also, the scattering length between the heavy light pair is also fixed to be infinite. So the question about three-body universality in the three-body parameter is that how does the three-body Fermat state wave function behave as the short-range cutoff parameter decreases to zero? So this is the value of the short-range cutoff for this potential over the ratio of this cutoff of this potential with the van der Waals radius for this heavy van der Waals interaction. So you can see that at this depth, as the potential of the depths become deeper and deeper, so that cutoff becomes smaller and smaller, there are just more and more oscillatory parts as more distance are developed. But the long range part of the Fermat state, Fermat wave function is unchanged. And when we look at the ground Fermat state energy, as a function of the ratio between this cutoff over the van der Waals length between heavy pair, you can see that it is almost unchanged. So it doesn't matter, actually, in fact, it doesn't matter how deep the potential at small distance could be. The ground Fermat state energy and excited, and correspondingly the excited Fermat state energy will stay the same. So by looking at the position of this the node of the ground Fermat state, we can derive an analytical expression for the energy of the ground Fermat state in terms of the van der Waals length between the heavy pair, and strength. This S0 basically represents the strength of this 1r² potential, which is a universal constant for given mass ratio between the heavy pair, heavy light pair. And also this energy universally depends on the scattering length between the heavy pair. So that is derived from the Born-Oppenheimer approximation. So the remaining question is how good the Born-Oppenheimer approximation could be compared to the exact treatment. So this is the energy of the ground and the first two excited F-mol state energy versus the scatter length inverse of the homonuclear scatter length. So there are different calculations. The green line are calculated by the Bornheimer approximation. This blue line, blue dashed line, is given by the analytical expression that I have shown here. The points are calculated exactly by using the hyperspherical representation, by coupling all the adiabatic channels and including the non-adiabatic couplings. So for the ground state, ground F-mol state, you can see that the agreement between the Bornheimer approximation and the exact hyperspherical calculation pretty well. So for the excited states, the deviation, there's some deviation, mostly because the strength of the F-mol potential, or this 1R square potential given by the Bornheimer, is not so exact. Now here I have changed the number of bound state in the two-body subsystem by one bound state and two bound state for each of the pairs, for both the heavy light and heavy pairs. Now you can see that the circles and the squares basically fall on the same curve. So in other words, the short range, the change in the short range physics by changing number of bound states and fixing the heavy scatter lengths does not change the three body parameter. So from that study, that we know that the three body parameter is expected to be universal in the atomic systems. So we want to apply this study to some realistic system that is experimentally available recently.
In what sense would you say it's universal? Can you make that precise statement?
Universal three body parameter?
Yes.
In the sense that in atomic system where you have van der Waals interaction, the three body parameter depends only on the van der Waals length between the heavy pair and the van der Waals length of the heavy pair and the scatter length between the heavy pair. However, the short range details where the chemistry happens, the depth of the potential, or where the potential cutoff at small distance, does not affect the three body parameter.
You mentioned experimental number like minus 9 point something.
Yeah, that's for homonuclear. Yeah, that's for homonuclear.
When you say it's universal, can you give a sharp number that can be compared with that?
Oh, in this case, for a homonuclear case, you can get a number that is proportional to the van der Waals length for any pairs. But in this case, however, to get that number, you need to solve these two transcendental equations. So there's no, because this number, proportional number for the three body parameter in this heteronuclear system depends on more parameters.
Besides the van der Waals?
Yeah, it also depends on the scatter lengths of the homonuclear pairs.
So it's not really universal in the sense that it depends on no parameters.
Well,
but you
want to
say it depends on
the two-body scatter length. Yes and no. By the same argument, you can say that the universal three-body parameter people are talking about in the homonuclear case is also non-universal because it depends on the van der Waals length, which is a two-body, the character for two-body interaction. But here, the idea for the universality or universal three-body parameter is to emphasize the independence of this parameter on the short-range details, how the interaction, the cutoff. For instance, here, this calculation basically giving is done by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 S-wave bound state. Now, in reality, in realistic atomic system, there will be hundreds of such bound states. The idea here, or the main point here, is that the three-body parameter is not dependent on how many states you have in the system.
In this case, it depends upon the Van der Waals and another scattering.
That's right. Yeah.
Adrian, did you need to assume that the A between the two heavies is large compared to the R van der Waals, or did the does this formula apply for any case?
Yes, in a sense, yes. But universal, yeah, that's right.
Which yes? I mean, A is large.
Is you mean if the homonuclear scatterings need to be large?
You need a sub AA to be over R van der Waals AA to be bigger than one?
No.
Okay.
No.
You say that on the next slide, you say that even if you have A is zero, can you go to the next slide?
The next slide? You mean the previous one?
So even if A subscript double A is zero, that will work.
You mean this case?
Yes.
Yes, sure. Actually, the smaller is better.
But then, the statement that you make about that it doesn't depend on the short range parameters, I mean, you have to nuance that a little bit, because this A and this scattering length does depend on short range parameters. Because that the short range region gives you the
depends on the number of bound states. Because the short range is small, but there's
a number of bound states. The exact value of A depends on
yeah,
that's
point,
true.
That's
the statement about universality depending only on A. A always depends on the whole potential, including the short range. So even in the kind of great universality stuff that Eric's done so much excellent theory on, that's universal, but yet the A that's physically realized depends on the short range potential. But of course, the only thing that's important is the A, this fundamental threshold scattering parameter. So it's universal in that sense. It always depends on the short range.
Depends universally on A.
Depends universally on A. A contingently depends on the short range physics.
No matter what A depends on.
But well, with the effect of effects for three, the same particle, then you can always say, well, when I put A to infinity, and then I only have a three body parameter, and this depends on the Van der Waals.
That's right. The old style three-body thinking was that the energy of the first member of the series was absolutely unpredictable and depended on some uncontrolled short-range three-body parameter. The new thinking, established experimentally and by some of the new theory being done, says that in the case of the Van der Waals potential, the first member of the series had an energy that's determined given the Van der Waals length.
Yeah, for instance, the difference people want to make is that for, let's say, in this case, if this Van der Waals interaction gives a scatterlength, now at small distance, I can, you can turn off this interaction by many ways. For instance, you can put in a repulsive barrier. For instance, you can make this softened like this. For these two different types of potential, you can have the same scatterlength. Previous thought, as Paul had mentioned, previous thought is that for these two different potentials, even if they have the same scatterlength, even if they give the same scatterlength, the three-body parameter will be completely different. Because the short-range behavior is completely different. That's the idea of why people have this non-universal three-body parameter in mind. So in this case, if the universal three-body parameter we are talking about, it basically is just rule of this possibility.
In the case of identical bosons, where you would have only the Van der Waals scale and not this extra scattering length.
That's right.
You would say it's universal, and can you give a sharp value for the three-body parameter determined by R van der Waals?
In this case,
yes. Or do you have a fuzzy value?
Oh, this is a more exact. Yeah, that's true. It is exact value, but it's a value, you know, solved by this transcendental equation. So it could be like depending on the mass ratio. Let's see.
I see r plus and r minus. What is r plus and r minus?
R minus, okay, let's see.
I see three radii in that equation. One of them is van der Waals.
R plus is this actually the position of this node. R minus is the position of the previous two nodes in this wave function. The reason to introduce an R minus and R plus is to actually characterize this transitional region from this van der Waals interaction to the universal F-mol potential, 1 R squared potential. Now, in the place they are connected, there's a universal form, but you need to do some math to connect them together. There's a matching condition.
What I'm looking for is an expression for some universal, for a three body length scale that's some universal numerical constant times R van der Waals. And can you give such an expression?
Yeah, actually what you can do by using these two expressions is that using the first expression, you can determine this, using the second expression, you can determine this R minus value by solving this transcendental equation. If you know the scatter lengths, heavy scatter lengths, and heavy.
In case of identical bosons, where you have an experimental value to compare with, can you get an expression for a three-body length that is a universal numerical constant times the van der Waals?
Okay, I see. So this expression works. The derivation for this expression is for two heavy and one light particle, for that limit. But so if you want to apply it to the identical particle case, this won't work. Simply won't work. This work for this limit.
Okay. So the question is, in the case of identical particles, can you give the expression for a three-body radius that's a universal numerical constant times van der Waals? Or is the fuzzy relation that's kind of 9 plus or minus something?
Oh, in this case, it's more exact, because you solved this.
Okay, in the case of three identical particles.
Three identical particles. As far as I know, the answer to Eric's question is no. That is to say, there is no precise number.
Oh, you mean not from this analysis?
Yeah. Minus 9.5 is only approximate. There's no derivation of an exact value of that number.
That's right. Sorry, I thought you were referring to this expression still. Yeah, in that case, the study was based on numerical calculations, and there's always a fuzzy value. In this case, in the limit of two heavy one light, you have a sharp value determined by this transcendental equation.
So it sounds like there might be some analytic theory that might be possible to be done there, which hasn't been done yet. So
in any case, we know that the Born-Hymer analysis for the universal three-body parameter works fine. By comparing to the hyperspherical calculation, exact calculation. So when we apply this, if we want to apply that analysis, result from that analysis to the realistic system, we have to consider one difference. Now the previous analysis was made with a assumption that the flashbulb resonance is broad. In other words, it can be represented by a single channel interaction between the particles. And in reality, in atomic systems, near flashbulb resonance, there's always a finite width. And it's not always true that the flashbulb resonance can be represented by a single channel approximation. So let's take a look to how to deal with three-body collisions in alkali atoms. Now, in three particles, for three particles, this three, the total three-body wave function can be expanded in these different coordinates. In hyperspheric coordinate, this is a hyperradio dependence of the three-body wave function. Now, this this expansion characterizes the for fixed hyperradius, the dependence of wave function on the two hyperangles representing the shape of the three-body system and the permutation of the three particles. Now, this Wigner D function represents the overall rotation of the three particles in the body frame. Now, this has been done mostly for single channel spinless three particles or three atoms. Now, moving to actual atoms, we need to include the spin bases, where this MS characterizes the spin of the electron, and MIs characterize the spin of the nuclear, of the nucleus. So
what is the lambda superscript on the phi already in the equation? Is that the same
lambda? This lambda?
Yes.
Yeah, the same as this one.
It should be the summation on the other side.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that summation should be on the other side.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, so the point is that for the realistic atoms, these bases could be relatively large for three particles because basically you need to permutate all these all the combination of different spin degrees of freedom. Now, for instance, here I'm showing an example for lithium 7 atoms, where the electronic spin is half, since the atom only have one active electron, unpaired electron, a nuclear spin is 3/2. So for each of the lithium atoms, there are 8 hyperfine levels. Naively, you would, because of conservation of the total angular momentum, including the spatial angular momentum m and the total sum of the ms, the total number of the bases need to be included in the calculation, the basic square of this number, between square of this number and the cubic of this number.
So these amps, they're not the actual spin projections, are they?
What do we mean by spin projections?
So are you really taking into account the internal structure of the atoms?
That's right, yeah.
In
magnetic field, that's right. This is a projection of the spin for the unpaired electron.
Nuclear spin and electron size.
That's right, this is a nuclear spin.
There's projection. Eight times eight.
Yeah, in principle, you want to, yeah, that's how many you need to include.
576 squared, instead of 8 squared, one times the number of
factors. 8 cubed. Because in principle, for each atom, you need to include 8 spin hyperfine levels.
So each of those 6 m's, no, one, sorry, each 3 m's. So each of the 3 m's has 8 values.
This is in a different spin. Well, here I'm referring to a hyperfine level after combining them. Yeah. So, but bottom line is that in principle, the largest number of bases you want to include is this number cubed. But in reality, because of conservation of the angular momentum projection, you end up between the square of this number and the cubic of this number. But it's still a large number, especially when you consider that the total angular momentum is not conserved because of the dipole-dipole interaction. So in this calculation, I'm showing adiabatic hyperspherical potentials for three lithium 7 atoms. Here I'm including only 2 of the hyperfine levels for each atom. So in total, I have included 8 hyperfine channels in the three body calculation. And I have included the lowest 2 total angular momentum, J equals 0, J equals 2. This is a calculation performed at a magnetic field of 200 Gauss. Clearly, there's also a question about how deep the two-body potential will will be in the calculation. In this case, I didn't include the actual two-body interaction, which is about a few thousand wave numbers deep. Here, I'm only Lander-Jones potential. That is a cutoff, short-range cutoff around the 20 Bohr, which gives about two S wave states, so about seven row vibrational states in total. So
I'm sorry, what's the point of doing this in a magnetic field if you're using global potentials anyway?
Just to look at the topology of the potential and behavior of this
split. But that's also going to depend on the short range of the potential, the actual potential series.
Yeah, definitely the deeper part will depend more on the short range part. The potential near the breakup threshold, however, is less dependent on that. Definitely one difference, yeah, is that when the two-body short-range interaction becomes stronger or cutoff becomes smaller, there will be more row vibrational state. Especially there will be more rotational state or rotational threshold channels near the breakup threshold. But the general topology of the potential probably is similar. The point is that even in this pretty simple case, the density of channels near the breakup threshold is already pretty high. Here I'm including the lowest about 200 channels in the from the calculation. Just cover the channels that goes to the three-body breakup threshold. So there are about 150 channels below this three-body breakup threshold in this case.
What's the total number?
In this case, about 150.
No. So you're solving the Schrodinger equation with all of them, right? Not just 150, but only
the
ones below?
That's right, yeah.
Total number of channels?
Oh, total on the chamber in this calculation? Yeah. It's about 300 channels. Because there will be infinite, if I calculate the continuum channels, three-body continuum, there will be infinite number of those channels, right? In this calculation, I only calculate lowest about 200. I'm showing lowest 200 channels. As you go to a higher collisional energy for three free particles, you need to include more channels. That's definitely for sure.
You mean when you say there will be infinite, that's because you have an infinite number of partial waves?
Yeah, that's right. Different infinite.
But you know that kind of. It's only, I mean, you only have S waves contributing. You know, that's very interesting, right?
Let's see.
And the atoms are ultra cold, right? So you don't need to worry about higher partial waves out there, right?
It's true. Yeah, that's true.
So yeah. I guess my question is, you know, would it? I mean, why did you still use Lander-Jones for this? I mean, would it be possible? I mean, would the calculation be possible if you used the cool potential? But this is lithium cesium, right?
It's certainly harder because representing the wave function in a for a much deeper potential needs more spatial
right.
Resolution.
You need more hypersurgical.
Oh, in this calculation, I didn't use a harmonic expansion actually. This calculation, this wave function is calculated by a splice, a basis of a splice. So, but the,
yeah,
I think.
The angular coordinates.
Yeah. Well, this angular coordinate is just analytic. The relative angles are. These relative angles are calculated by the splice.
Yeah, Jen, we've gone a little over an hour, so maybe we typically kind of let these things go. Maybe go another 15 minutes, maybe get to lithium cesium.
Yeah, let me move.
So this one, sorry,
go ahead.
This is lithium, yeah.
Yeah, this is lithium. Lithium trimer. Yeah, so the idea is that by including this hyperfine degrees of freedom and different partial waves, the calculation will be pretty hard to solve the real realistic system. So we still want to get some insight for a realistic system. For instance, in the case of two identical particles with distinct particle. Now, we are more interested in the physics near Fischbach resonance, where hopefully the short range detail is less important when the scattering lines become large. So for this system, there's a reasonably easy representation we can use. We can build a two-channel model for the interactions between the heteronuclear pair. So idea is that in case of there's a Fischbach resonance between the heteronuclear pair, we can use such a two-channel model to better represent the Fischbach resonance between these pairs. So let's say we let the distinguishable atom to carry an internal state that represents spin, a virtual spin, you can say. So according to this the state of the distinguished particle, the potential interaction between the particles can be behave like two channels, have different threshold, breakup threshold. Now, in each of the channels, we use a long-range Van der Waals interaction. The short-range, we use we can use Lennard-Jones potential that has a long-range Van der Waals interaction and short-range cutoff to reduce the demand requirement numerical burden of the calculation. So this kind of Fischbach resonance, using this two-channel representation, the Fischbach resonance can be characterized by an SRS parameter that characterizes the strength of the resonance. When the SRS parameter is larger than one, it corresponds to a broad Fischbach resonances, and in the opposite way, it corresponds to narrow Fischbach resonances. So in a three-body Schrödinger equation can be cast in this form, in the hyperspherical coordinate. The idea is that we use a single-channel interaction for the homonuclear pairs, and use this two-channel model for the heteronuclear pairs. So we want to apply this model in a recently available experimental system, the cesium plus lithium admixture. So recently, people have observed and also have calculated the scattering between in the cesium-lithium mixture. So for relative high magnetic field, there are a few resonance, Fischbach resonance between the cesium and lithium-6. In the ground lithium-cesium channels, there are two narrow Fischbach resonances and one broad Fischbach resonance. Oh, sorry, this one. One narrow Fischbach resonance and one broad Fischbach resonance in this range of the magnetic field. And for the first excited cesium-lithium breakup channel, there are also a broad Fischbach resonance. And these two broad Fischbach resonances in different channels, two-body scattering channels, have pretty comparable Fischbach parameter, have background scatterings about both at about minus 30 Bohr, and has a width of 60 Gauss. SRS parameter is 0.7. It's roughly between a broad Fischbach resonance and narrow Fischbach resonance. But interesting thing is that if you look at the scatterings between the cesium pair in this interested magnetic field region, actually, the scattering between the cesium can change from large negative and to large positive. If also interesting, if you look at the cesium lithium scattering in different channels, so that these are disk-like fermions, there's a pole near this near the Fischbach resonance between the cesium lithium. So there could be very rich physics going on in this range of magnetic field where people can tune the scattering for each pairs very large range. So we have calculated three-body F-mon resonance, three-body recombination rate for the for system of two cesium atom, one lithium six atom, using this two-channel model, two-channel representation. So in the ground two-body channel, we have found two F-mon resonances. Each of them are located at minus 500 Bohr and minus 3100 Bohr for the cesium lithium scattering. The cesium scattering in this range of the cesium lithium scattering is relatively mild, moderate. It only changed from minus 1400 to minus 1600. Interesting thing is that as I have showed you the universal prediction for the three-body parameter, so I was able to predict where the F-mon resonances appear in three-body recombination by using that universal theory.
Do you get this from the model you presented now in the previous slide, or do you get it from what you presented later?
The numerical calculations are... the numerical calculations are these data points with lines connecting them are calculated by this two-channel model. So it's obtained by numerical solved three-body Schrödinger equation exactly within this model.
Okay, but the three-body parameter?
So this is a dashed line.
Out of this calculation, or do you still need to treat it?
So the dashed line is obtained. The dashed line representing the position of the resonance that gives the three-body parameter is from the universal theory I just presented. That's from single-channel theory. So that's Bornheimer. Yeah, that's right. So, but here you can see that difference between them is really not so large. In the excited cesium-lithium channel, where the scattering between the cesium dimers is different, you can see that the universal prediction gives the F-mon resonance here, whereas the numerical calculation for this using this two-channel model is a little bit off. But if you use a universal argument, if you know a three-body resonance, F-mon resonance here, your separation of this feature should be about factor of five. You divide this scattering by a factor of five, you would expect another three-body resonance here, around 300 Bohr of scattering, which is still, the value of the scattering is still larger than van der Waals length in both pairs. But we don't see a resonance here. One possible reason is because of interference of this cesium dimer that could be nearby this F-mon resonance. So that you don't see that the first resonance per se. So we have also looked at the F-mon resonances for the narrow flashbar resonances I have shown in the previous plot.
Do you know how far you have to propagate in your hyperspherical coordinates to?
Typically, we propagate about a million Bohr.
Okay. Is that enough? I mean, if you go to...
That's enough, okay. Yeah. If you calculate, you propagate the wave function, scattering calculation to like 100,000 Bohr, it's not enough. So a million typically is necessary. Well, this also depends on representation, actually. In hyperspherical coordinates, the coupling between the channels, continuous channel to the bound channel, atom dimer channel is relatively strong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's one fundamental difference between the blue and the red lower region here. In the red case, the excited spin channel, the cesium scattering length is actually varying with magnetic field over the width of the resonance, and it's very small. So it's totally non-universal. So the cesium scattering length is getting to be quite nominal and small.
Yeah.
And it varies also. You actually use at a given magnetic field the real cesium, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So yeah, in for each of these data points, the cesium scattering is different according to the value of the magnetic field. So both of the cesium, lithium, cesium scattering are changing. The fact is that both of the scattering are changing as a function of magnetic field.
And in the blue curve, the cesium is very large and negative, whereas in the red curve, the cesium is small and nominal. So there's a fundamental difference in the cesium background. Because what Eugen's numerical model captures essentially is the single channel cesium background, which is put in, and the multi-channel lithium cesium multi-channel character. So the two-body aspects of both of those are captured very nicely.
You neglected all those channels and just put
yeah.
the scattering length.
He did. This is a three-channel calculation, in fact. Yeah. It's based on the known two-body scattering lengths. They represent the known two-body scattering lengths, and thus, therefore, correctly, the position of the last bound state in the two-body channel correctly.
But could you just do this one-channel calculation?
No, I don't think that works so well.
Yeah, the thing is that one could do a one-channel calculation. The problem is that for this flashbar resonances, it's kind of borderline of broad flashbar resonance. So.
Yeah, but all we care about is the magnitude of the scattering length. You just fit it for the one-channel.
Well, it's true for a broad resonance, but that's not true for a narrow resonance.
Yeah.
In a narrow resonance, something else intervenes and actually plays a role in the physics, which is the closed-channel character of the wave function.
So you care not only about the magnitude of the scattering length, but also about how quickly it decays.
Yeah.
Or marriage, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not so much the decay, it's the closed channel character due to coupling into a short-range bound state.
But that manifests itself.
I mean, the binding energy of the last bound state in the lithium-cesium open channel is not universally related to scattering length. It's non-universally related. Therefore, the only way you can build that in is through a two-channel model. So we have a non-universal relation between binding energy of last bound state and scattering length. And that's built numerically into the model correctly, so it reproduces correctly the two-body physics in the threshold region of lithium plus cesium. But I don't think it can be done with a single channel.
Well, you can do a single channel calculation. It will be approximate. You hope that the single channel representation is reasonable. Good, reasonably good for this relatively small SRS parameter. But for surely, when the SRS parameter becomes smaller, for instance, for these narrow resonances, it's guaranteed to fail.
Could you also do it in a single channel case with an additional effective range?
Yeah, we tried that. Usually it doesn't work so well. There's some non-universal physics you have, for instance, the thing is that at small distance, when you want to introduce some large effective range, for instance, to represent the narrow flashbar resonance, inevitably you have to change the short range physics to make a large effect range. And this change in the change in the short range physics typically is not universal. Using the single channel model to get a large effect range will basically give a different short range physics for two-channel model. So that's the uncertainty that that has not been answered yet.
How many more slides do you have?
Sorry?
How many more slides do
you have? Oh, I have finished. That's this is the last one.
That's the last one. And the one of the points worth making, there are two experimental groups very actively working on this system right now, trying to get the systems cold enough so they can actually make the measurements. So we've gone out on a limb and made a prediction, and hopefully there'll be an experiment soon that will either tell us this is garbage or it's right.
Were the two groups the experiments? Yeah, by Matthias?
Matthias and Ching Chen, yeah. They both have lithium-cesium mixtures, but neither are cold enough to actually get to this level. Okay. Any more questions for you, Jun, or
adjourn?
We adjourn, right? Yeah.
Okay. So we'll have a talk, a very interesting talk tomorrow by Jonathan, and the title is not on the website yet, but I guess it's going to be about chemical reactions at cryogenic temperatures.
Yeah, and that's 1:30. That's here.
I believe it's here.
Here at 1:30.
It's 1:30.
Is it 130 or 140? What we said it
for? Well, what is it?
130.
What's that 130?
Yeah, whatever it is on the wiki.
Whatever it is on the wiki.
Okay.
It's 130.
I'm pondering this four times. Yeah, there's
130 here.
130 here.
Can I see something? I have to be at the LA airport Friday at 6:30. So if anybody happened to have a flight leaving at 8 or 9 on Friday, I could take a passenger to that airport.
The other part.
I will.
I would fly at 1:30, but that's a lot earlier than you would be going. Okay, let's thank you, Jim.
Okay. Thanks for